Voy a ponerme la vacuna Prevnar 20 porque estoy en riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica,
la cual pudiera llevarme al hospital. Así que preguntaré sobre Prevnar 20.
65 años o más, puedes estar en mayor riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico acerca de vacunarte con Prevnar 20. Vacuna conjugada antineumocócica 20 valente. Una vacuna de Pfizer que puede ayudar a proteger contra la neumonía neumocócica con una sola dosis. Prevnar 20 está aprobada para adultos para ayudar a prevenir infecciones contra 20 cepas de la bacteria que causa la neumonía neumocócica. La aprobación continua puede depender de un estudio de apoyo. No uses Prevnar 20 si has tenido una reacción alérgica grave a la vacuna o a sus componentes. Adultos con sistemas inmunitarios debilitados pueden tener una respuesta reducida a la vacuna. El efecto secundario más reportado fue dolor en el área de la inyección. Para más efectos secundarios comunes e información completa de prescripción, llama al 1-855-213-2138 o visita Prevnar20enespañol.com. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico sobre Prevnar 20.
Today's podcast is sponsored by AMAC, the Association of Mature American Citizens. There is strength in numbers. Join today at amac.us/Carter. I'm very, very happy to tell you that we have my good friend Lou Elizondo on the show today. As you remember, Lou is a former U.S. Army counterintelligence officer. He was the director of the Pentagon's Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification System, which is ATIP, and he talks about that quite often. He has been an advocate leading the way on disclosure when it comes to unidentified aerial phenomena, or UFOs, as most people understand it. And he has really been holding the government accountable to release more information and get the information to us. Not only is this a national security issue, and I think Congress fully is aware of that now. We've seen that with legislation, bipartisan, by the way, legislation that has come into place so that we can study these phenomena. But it is also, I believe, important for all humankind that we understand what is happening in our universe, what is happening on our planet, and how we are a part of that. I don't believe that should remain a secret. I want you to please follow and subscribe. Get all the links to my show and as well to my social media at sarahacarter.com. You will also get the latest top stories there. And while you're there, sign up for our email list so that you do not get shadow banned. Before I get to Lou Elizondo, I want to talk to you about MyPillow. You know how much I love MyPillow products. MyPillow is a sponsor of the show. And its CEO, Mike Lindell, is a great American patriot. And you can find amazing towel sets, sheet sets, slippers, dog beds, anything and everything you can imagine at MyPillow.com/Carter. If you use Carter, you are going to get a phenomenal price on the current offer, which is towels. They're regularly, listen to this, $109.99. Now they're only $39.99. Can you believe that? $39.99. MyPillow 6-piece towel set with the promo code Carter, C-A-R-T-E-R. You will get them. They are cotton grown in the United States. They don't even have any of that weird lotiony feel. Every set comes with 2 bath towels, 2 hand towels, and 2 washcloths, and you can get them in any color you want. For a limited time, get the MyPillow 6-piece towel set, regularly $109.99, for only $39.99 with the promo code Carter. Visit MyPillow.com/Carter or call 1-800-685-7221. You'll also find deep discounts, listen to this, guys, on all MyPillow products, including MyPillow mattress topper, MyPillow Giza dream sheets, and so much more. Get your 6-piece, though, MyPillow towel set for only $39.99 at MyPillow.com/Carter or call 1-800-685-7221, MyPillow.com/Carter. So we have a lot to catch up on because we haven't had Lou Elizondo on for a while. And I want to bring back, I don't know if you remember the former Ministry of Defense press officer, Nick Pope from Great Britain. He was on the show also talking about his association with the government of Great Britain and the study of the phenomena of, I would say, UFOs, right? Unidentified flying objects. We shouldn't feel ashamed of even saying that word. or unidentified aerial phenomena. It doesn't matter which way you cut it. There is something in our skies. We know this is true. We have heard this directly from former DNIs, from the head of the CIA. They have admitted that there is something in our skies, and we do not know where they have come from. What we do know is this, is that they are not ours, and they are not belonging to our enemies that we know of because of the kind of technology that they have, right? And what we are witnessing in the skies. I mean, and I'm talking about our military as well as our top Air Force pilots and our Navy. And it's not just us, folks. The Russians are documenting it. I'm going to be talking to Lou about that. You do not want to miss this because I do ask him about, you know, Vladimir Putin putting his nukes on the ready at the first to second level. And what did that mean for these eight, you know, for these unidentified objects in our sky? I mean, are they monitoring the area to see if they're showing up? Because one of the big stories that came out of Lou's, I guess, testimony, as well as Christopher Mellon, and among others that have spoken about what they have witnessed in the sky, is that it is our nuclear facilities that these objects are most interested in. Very interesting, isn't it? Our nuclear facilities. So that is something that I think we need to understand. And I do talk to Lou about this in the episode, and you do not want to miss what he has to say. But, you know, will the government tell us more anytime soon? I mean, we're obviously focused on Ukraine. We've obviously been focused on national issues like the price of gas. My gosh, that has gone through the roof. I was in California. I couldn't believe when I saw $7.55 a gallon in California. That's just incredible. It's very important that we understand, though, other things that are happening in our world. I mean, while all of this noise is taking place and all of the tragedy that we've seen in Ukraine, we still have to keep up with everything else because I believe things are interconnected. I saw this really interesting story, and I don't know if you all out there read The Guardian, but Nick Pope actually spoke to The Guardian, and I am actually going to be at an event this year with Nick Pope in Colorado talking about unidentified aerial phenomena. And remember, Nick Pope worked for the British government. He lives here now. He said, to The Guardian, I think we'll see congressional hearings on UFOs. I also think we'll see the release of more U.S. military photos and videos of UFOs and associated documents. Some of this come via whistleblowers, but much of it may be released by the government itself, either proactively or in response to requests under the Freedom of Information Act, FOIAs. And he said, finally, I think we'll see more high-caliber witnesses coming forward. And that's really interesting because Lou talks about that in my interview with him coming up. He talks about, you know, specifically how some people, even in the government, have been direct witnesses to these objects in the sky and how that has changed them and how that has changed their perception on talking about it and investigating it and allocating resources towards it so that we better understand how to protect ourselves or better understand what it is, you know, these incredible objects that are in our sky and who is controlling them. So I think that's very, very important. I think that's something that we need to take a look at. You know, the Pentagon's been obviously getting more secretive about this than transparent. And that's something else that I will be talking to Lou about because I would hate for us to get to a point where we are shut down again, where we're not talking about it, right? Where we're not discussing it on a global level. Because I think this is a global issue. I mean, I see the United States and I can understand other countries' interest in this and keeping this information secretive for themselves. But in all reality, this is an issue that affects all of humanity and will affect all of us in the future. And I take it very, very seriously. There's an interesting story in The Hill, how government overclassification may hide UFO videos and harm our security. And that is in The Hill. It's a great story. I'll just read you quickly the top, and then we'll get right into Lou Elizondo and the phenomenal interview that he gave me. But this is a story. Remember those videos taken by U.S. military pilots showing unidentified objects? They were flying around at incredible speeds and executing impossible maneuvers. Both Christopher Mellon and Lou Elizondo have spoken about it. They've appeared widely in various media since 2017. But if the DOD gets its way, going forward, all of those videos and the materials relating to UFOs, officially known as unidentified aerial phenomena, will be classified and will not be available to the public. Isn't this crazy? I mean, how do they hide this stuff from us? We have the Director of National Intelligence, Avril Haines, recently acknowledged that excessive government classification undermines U.S. national security. I agree. She wrote in January a letter to U.S. senators saying, "It is my view that deficiencies in the current classification system undermine our national security as well as critical democratic objectives by impeding our ability to share information in a timely manner." She also acknowledged that excessive classification damages the public's faith in government and basically reduces the intelligence community's capacity to effectively support senior policy-making decision-making. That's what she said, quote-unquote. I totally agree with her.
Si tienes ciertas afecciones crónicas como enfermedad cardíaca,
asma,
diabetes, y tienes 19 años o más,
52,
36,
42,
puedes estar en mayor riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico acerca de vacunarte con Prevnar 20, vacuna conjugada antineumocócica 20 valente, una vacuna de Pfizer que puede ayudar a proteger contra la neumonía neumocócica con una sola dosis. Prevnar 20 está aprobada para adultos para ayudar a prevenir infecciones contra 20 cepas de la bacteria que causa la neumonía neumocócica. La aprobación continua puede depender de un estudio de apoyo. No uses Prevnar 20 si has tenido una reacción alérgica grave a la vacuna o a sus componentes. Adultos con sistemas inmunitarios debilitados pueden tener una respuesta reducida a la vacuna. El efecto secundario más reportado fue dolor en el área de la inyección. Para más efectos secundarios comunes e información completa de prescripción, llama al 1-855-213-2138 o visita Prevnar20enespañol.com. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico sobre Prevnar 20.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
And now, without any further delay, I've got Lou Elizondo, my good friend, former U.S. Army counterintelligence officer, and by the way, former director of the Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program. Remember, folks, that's the office at the Pentagon that was tasked with investigating reports of unidentified aerial phenomena, aka UFOs. Hey, Lou, I'm so happy to have you back on the show, my friend.
Sarah, thank you very much for having me, and thank you for your wonderful audience for having me back.
Well, I mean, it's been a while since we've talked, and for me, the topic of advanced aerospace threat identification and UAPs, UFOs for all the laymen out there, is a really important topic because it was groundbreaking over the last several years when the United States government began to, I guess, disclose. You as well were a part of that disclosure process. You kind of force the hand of the U.S. military. For those of you out there who have not had a chance to hear Lou yet, you got to go back and listen to our older podcast. But I want you to know that he's a former U.S. Army counterintelligence officer, and he's the former director of the Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program that was at the Pentagon. So I'm glad to have you back on the show, Lou, just so we can get updates and talk about some of the new developments that are ongoing.
Yeah, I mean, Sarah, first of all, you know, major kudos to you and those in your audience, because you were one of the first really folks in the early days to pick this up within the media and start reporting on it, despite the risk to obviously your reputation, because it is a topic, let's face it, that's got a lot of stigma and taboo associated with it. The moment you say UAP, or I guess in the vernacular UFO, people all of a sudden, you know, they start to kind of look at you kind of strange, maybe they cock their head a little bit and And in reality, we now realize how serious this topic really is, and frankly, how it relates to national security. But let's not forget that just 3.5 years ago, nobody ever would have reported on this. It was you and a handful of others, Tucker, George Knapp, and a few others. Yeah, Tucker Carlson, that decided to go out and break ranks and really start reporting on this. And, you know, here we are, right? You had a 180-day report. You had an amendment that was co-sponsored by Senator Gillibrand and Marco Rubio. It then became law. You have the establishment now, since last we spoke, of what we call the AIM office, or the AOIMSG office, a very senior level of the U.S. government. You have various strategic strategies now being promulgated. And you have reporting on UAPs now almost on a daily basis by our men and women in uniform. So we've come a long, long way since even just the last, you know, short time ago that we spoke.
Yeah, let's talk about that a little bit before we go on. And by the way, George Knapp is historical. He has been following this almost his entire career since being a reporter in Las Vegas. He is a phenomenal reporter who really broke ground on exposing and attempting to get all the truth out that he could possibly about UFOs, and making it so that it wasn't a subject that people would be like embarrassed to talk about or afraid that they would be ostracized or called crazy if they spoke about it. And we talked about that in the past too, Lou, you and I both. Let's talk about the legislation first. There was legislation. It was, I believe, in Section 1683 of the National Defense Authorization Act. And that was what allowed the Department of Defense to reauthorize the creation of a new office, right, to study the phenomena of UAPs or UFOs. Am I right on that? There was already your office, though, right? So what was different about this?
Sure. So great question, Sarah. So let me go through a little bit of history, if I can, here for your audience so they understand kind of how this evolved. So in 2008, you had in 2007, actually, the creation of the OSAP effort. OSAP effort was an effort that looked at UAPs, amongst other things. And the former director that everybody knows now, it was a gentleman named Dr. Jim Lekatsky, super guy. And in 2008, ATIP kind of sprouted out as a result of the OSAP program. I was brought in 2008 to set up the counterintelligence and security apparatus for ATIP, which was specifically focused on the UAP issue. In 2010, I subsequently took charge of that effort. And after 7 years or so, in 2017, I resigned my position as the senior leader or director of ATIP. And I did that out of protest. I did that because at the time, General Jim Mattis, if anybody's ever had a chance to serve with him, knows he's an incredibly honorable man. And I had the honor and privilege of serving with him in the past. And for whatever reason, some of the minders at the very senior levels did not want to tell the boss or give him a briefing about UAPs and the fact that we had reports coming in from the field. A lot of our pilots were encountering these things, and even our Navy ships, and nobody wanted to tell the emperor, right, so to speak, that he has no clothes, or in essence say, hey, look, boss, these things are real. And so I wound up resigning in 2017. It turns out that my deputy, I won't say his name because he hasn't gone public yet, but at the time an ATIP winds up becoming the first, that morphs into, so ATIP goes away in essence, doesn't really go away, it just changes names, and it becomes the UAP Task Force. And so my deputy winds up becoming the new director for the UAP Task Force, and it begins to report on information to Congress. By that time, the media, such as yourself, picks up on the story and starts saying, hey, there's something to see here, folks. We've got enough men and women in uniform that are reporting these things. We have it on electro-optical. We have it on radar. This is real. Whatever this is, it's real. And so that started the journey where we are today. And so members of Congress start getting briefed on this by people inside the U.S. government. And it begins to increase in scope. So when I was in ATIP, our focus primarily was military sources and military equipment. So if there was a pilot, let's say, flying an F-18, we would get the reports, we would analyze it, and we would assess it. What you have now is something that is, forgive the old cliche, this isn't your father's Oldsmobile, but it really isn't. This is a far more robust, far more capable effort. U.S. government wide. So we're looking at the entire intelligence community, the entire Department of Defense, and then we're talking about civilian agencies like FAA and perhaps NOAA, all to pool their resources and their capabilities together to try to get a better, what we call sight picture, or better fidelity on this incredible enigma that we now realize is true and real. And it turns out that some members in Congress, specifically Senator Gillibrand and Senator Marco Rubio, this is a big deal, because you're talking about people who politically are on opposite ends of the spectrum and yet came together for this one cause. And it's not just those folks, but you have folks like Congressman Gallegos out of Arizona and Congressman Tim Burchett out of Tennessee. Again, opposite ends of the aisle and yet coming together and really championing this cause for the greater good of the American people, showing that this topic really is a nonpartisan issue. This is, or you might be a bipartisan issue, perhaps. But the bottom line is that Congress can work together in certain areas, and this is proof positive that Congress is working together on this. And honestly, I think there's a lot of people that should be applauded for their efforts. There's on both sides of that, on both sides of the aisle.
You know, I couldn't agree with you more, Lou. And I but then I it goes to the other thoughts go running through my head. I'm thinking, like, they know something, right? We have talked about all kinds of issues when it comes to these unidentified aerial phenomena. We've talked in the past about the fact that, you know, they've been located very closely, and I'll have you describe them for our audience, for those of you out there that have not heard Lou talk about these objects yet, these unidentified aerial phenomena that appear to be maneuverable and be operated by intelligent life forces or such. But they have been seen around our nuclear facilities. They've definitely been in areas where our military, our Navy, our Air Force have been operating. So I would assume that, especially with Marco Rubio or Senator Gillibrand and others, there's got to be a national security concern here as well, because they've got to be saying, like, what is this? What is going on in our skies? Why don't we have the answers? I mean, it could be a good thing, but it could be something that could be detrimental as well.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And major kudos to the senators and the Congress person's staff, because a lot of people don't realize that behind every senator and every congressperson is a fairly robust and capable staff of individuals that do a lot of the heavy lifting as well for those members. And so you have these people that belong to committees, whether it's the Senate Armed Services Committee or the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence or the HASC or the SASC. These folks are equally engaged, and they are getting information almost on a daily basis from certain sources within the Department of Defense and the intelligence community. And what they're getting is very, very perplexing and very convincing. We're not talking about, as I've said before, you know, maybe someone whose grandmother saw some lights, you know, in the backyard. We're talking about trained observers that understand the difference between an F-16, an Su-22, and a MiG-25. And understands those silhouette differences from 20 miles away. And by the way, are trained to make a split second decision to shoot it or not. And so not only are these pilots and other individuals, sailors and airmen and soldiers, reporting these things, even helicopter pilots, but it's also being backed up on gun camera footage and radar. Now, why is that interesting? Well, you know, people can have something prosaic and say, well, it's a drone. Well, fine, but if you understand how drones work, you'll realize that drones have an operating parameter, and what we're seeing are things that operate well outside that operating parameter. So case in point, let's take a typical high-performance aircraft in the U.S. government inventory right now, and that would be the General Dynamics F-16. It is one of still, it's an older aircraft, but still one of the most highly maneuverable aircraft we have in our current inventory. And the human body can experience about 9 G-forces before you start having severe issues, biological issues, such as redouts and blackouts and ultimately death, because the G load is too much on the human body to take.
Wow.
An F-16 can handle about probably 17 Gs, maybe a little bit more, before you start having structural failure, like wings begin to snap off and whatnot. Well, what we are seeing are aircraft, or whatever they are, things that are performing not 19, 20 Gs, but 600, 700, 800 G-forces. Well beyond anything that we currently have within the design specifics to handle. And then furthermore, you have other things such as hypersonic velocity. Those are speeds in excess of 5 times the speed of sound. And so think about it. Do we have aircraft that can do that? Sure, we have things like the SR-71 Blackbird, But let's even at top speed, let's say 3,200 miles an hour, if it wanted to make a right-hand turn, it takes you roughly half the state of Ohio to do it. And yet what we are seeing are things that can do these abrupt right-angle turns and 180-degree turns at that speed. We just simply don't have that technology right now.
Are the senators, when you talk to them, and I'm not asking you what you speak about privately, especially in a classified level, I'm not asking that at all, but are they as stunned as I am when it comes to when you describe the situation to them, you show them the videos that have been declassified, you talk to them? I mean, are they as concerned or stunned, or what's going on in their heads that you're grasping from, like, our lawmakers about what's going on up in our skies?
You know, Sarah, it's interesting because sometimes some of these lawmakers aren't surprised at all because they've had their own experience. And of course, they don't want to talk about it publicly. And I respect that. I won't share it, either who or what specific incidents they're referring to. But a lot of these
folks tease come up to me. You tease me, Lou.
No. Well, you know, I have to protect some information sometimes. But these people have told me in confidence. They said, hey, Lou, look, you know, I was with my father fishing. And I saw one of these things come out of the lake. It was right there with my father. So, you know, you'd be surprised when you get people, you know, one-on-one, how much they're willing to share with you and how receptive they are. In other cases, folks like, you know, Marco Rubio and his staff, you know, they're looking at this very much from a national security perspective. Look, we know someone has this capability. So let's just imagine for a second it is Russia or China. You know, we've got a big problem here because that means this would be the greatest intelligence failure our country has ever faced, even that eclipsing of 9/11, because that means for the last 70 years, and think about that, because we have the documentation to prove it, you've seen it, that there we have seen these same performance characteristics for the last 70 years. And if it turned out, let's just hypothetically say Russia or China did have this technology 70 years ago, that means for the last 70 years, despite the greatest human and SIGINT and IMINT and ELINT and all these type of, if you will, intelligence capabilities we haven't been able to figure, we've been blindsided. Someone has been able to operate in our controlled U.S. airspace completely anonymous and without any recourse. So now, if you were to ask me and others,
I'm going to.
Russian or Chinese technology, no, the answer is it's becoming increasingly clear. This is not some sort of foreign adversarial technology. This is, we're dealing truly with something else.
Let's talk about that, because I've got two questions here. One, Vladimir Putin put his nuclear forces on alert over a week ago. He was saying that it was due to aggressive statements from the West. The first thing I thought of when he did that first level of alert, I thought about our conversations. And I thought to myself, I wonder if by him putting his nukes on that first level of alert, I don't know what that requires, or that second level. I don't know what that requires, what that entails, if that sends out some kind of signal. But what does that mean? I mean, in the sense that we've seen these vehicles around our nuclear arsenals, and they've been activated based on past information. They've actually been activated because of that. Because of our testing and everything. Have you heard anything yet? Is there been any indication?
Well, for the sake of your audience, let me rewind the tape just a hair here, but you're absolutely right. So we have very specific information that indicates there is some sort of reconnaissance or surveillance being done on our nuclear technology and capabilities. So whether it's nuclear propulsion, nuclear weapon systems, or nuclear technology. And we have here actual documented cases where these UAP, or I hate to say UFOs, but UFOs, have interfered with our ability and actually deactivated our nuclear response capability for a short period of time. But there's also equally interesting information from the Russian side that these UAPs have actually turned them on, right, if you will, or put them into a state of ready alert. And that's even more concerning than turning them off. And then, of course, now that we have this horrible issue right now in the Ukraine and what's going on, terribly, terribly sad and tragic on all sides. You know, one of the things we're looking at is to determine, look, can we expect to see UAP activity in and around some of these nuclear equities in the Ukraine? And if so, you know, why? That is something that we are, when I say we, there are certain elements, and I can't go into a lot of detail, but there are certain elements that are actually looking at that. Are there any telltale signs that there's increased UAP activity in and around maybe some of these vulnerable locations? And that's a great question. And right now it's a little bit too early to tell, but that is a very valid question, and we are looking at that.
So certainly that would be something that would be observable, or something that we would want to observe if it is occurring. And I think that I agree with you. I think it would be the idea of them, of these UAPs or these UFOs actually turning on systems as well as turning them off, tells me that we have no control over our most important arsenal on planet Earth, the arsenal that could literally eliminate us.
Yeah. And you know what? There's a, I'm going to be a little controversial here, but there's an argument. Some people say, you know, well, nuclear weapons are terrible, and obviously they are, but some people have argued, interestingly enough, that it's actually the nuclear weapons that has kept peace for so long, because it's obviously assured mutual destruction, right? So if the bad guys and we decide to go start launching, then, you know, we're going to have a much different conversation. And so the fact that, although we don't know how World War III may be fought, you know, World War IV will be fought with probably sticks and stones. So it's possible that the nuclear, if you will, presence on this planet may have, in a weird, ironic sort of way, actually helped keep the peace for the last 50 years, simply because it is such a destructive device. And if there is a technology that can come in and interfere with your ability to keep that nuclear posture, you know, some will argue, well, that's a good thing. Well, okay, but maybe not. And what if these UAPs are only going to disable or interfere with one side's nuclear capabilities? Then that's not such a good thing. So,
Right. That wouldn't be. I was wondering how you felt about, and I'd read some stories where you were a little bit concerned, I'll get it straight from you, because I don't think I've asked you this in any of our phone conversations that we've had, but about the Pentagon's decision to keep the UAP office inside the office of the Undersecretary of Defense for Intelligence and Security. Is that an issue? And I mean, if we're looking at a broad scale where our government's actually going to be monitoring on multiple levels these sightings, how will that affect us getting the information? I mean, is it going to be, once again, are we going to be post-Roswell? Or, you know what I mean? Like, where everything is sure. Kind of shut off and anybody who says anything is going to be made fun of, or?
Yeah, no, I think we're beyond that. You're referring to the AOIMSG, or what we affectionately call the AIM office within the Undersecretary of Defense for Intelligence. And yes. Look, I'll tell you right now, and your audience probably already knows some of them anyways, that I belong to that old office, the Undersecretary of Defense for Intelligence. And that was some of the folks in there were the ones obfuscating and pretending like this wasn't an issue. And we're part of the problem. But in fairness, when the announcement first came out that it was going to be stuck in the USDI, I was very concerned, and so were my colleagues, because again, this was the same office that was responsible for obfuscating. But it turns out that there is potentially and I remain optimistic, that there is a concerted effort by certain leadership within the USDI office to actually take this topic not only seriously, but anybody who was involved with this effort in the past, bring in some fresh blood, bring in new people with new ideas who aren't jaded, who aren't part of the bureaucracy, if you will, the old bureaucracy of the USDI, and someone who has fresh ideas, and perhaps bring in a military individual as well, so a civilian and military to lead this effort. If they succeed in doing that and they pick the right people to lead it, then I think it has a chance of doing a tremendous amount of good for the American people. But if they go back to previous games and just want to complicate things bureaucratically and not really solve any problems, then you're going to have people like me continuing to be very vocal. People like Chris Mellon and whatnot, basically calling them out and saying, look, guys, you know, you either take this topic seriously or we'll find somebody else that will. And so that's kind of where we are right now. And I want to give the leadership in USDI a chance, an opportunity to succeed and do the right thing. You know, I don't want to be one of those guys that stands with a Molotov cocktail and just starts, you know, making problems. I do want to see it succeed. So USDI has a chance here to do it right. So let's keep our fingers crossed that they will do it that way.
You know, I want to move forward, because I believe that you are right. You do have to give that opportunity. But when I think about all the great work that you and Christopher Mellon have done to get the word out, I mean, I applaud you. But there's another side to that. There are people out there, and I'm sure you've seen it, we've talked about it on social media and such, that believe that, oh, Lou Elizondo, Christopher Mellon, they are working with the CIA or with some nefarious agency, and they are pushing disinformation. And it can be very dangerous as well for you to come forward and talk, because you have all of this, I guess, information flow, a lot of it inaccurate, out there on social media and in the press, that I mean, I'm asking you, is it dangerous sometimes? I mean, are you worried at all?
Yeah, I mean, look, I in 2014, I was added to a naughty list with Al-Qaeda and ISIS on their kill list because of some of my work I was doing in another portfolio. But for me, that's just part of the job, and you do what you do because it's the right thing to do. But when you have people out in social media that are threatening you and your family and whatnot, that's a different story, right? Because they're not supposed to be your enemy. And the problem with social media, which I'm sure you and others that in your audience can probably appreciate, you know, social media is wonderful because it offers an equal voice for every single person. It democratizes a conversation. But unfortunately, what most people don't realize necessarily with social media, although it gives you an equal voice, there's not necessarily equal intent. So where you and I may get on social media and have a conversation to try to learn from each other and discuss, there are people out there that don't want to do that. They actually want to suppress a conversation. They want to add things in there that are not accurate. And it's also true for some people in the media as well, that are not necessarily mainstream, but they maybe do freelance work. And we've caught people being paid by surrogates to write inaccurate hit pieces. And that's a shame, because, you know, you think in the media, you're supposed to be fair and objective. You know, we're all entitled to an opinion, but in the face of overwhelming evidence, to purposely ignore that, I think kind of goes against, you know, your conviction as a fair and objective journalist. And what happens is that you also have people on social media that are very, very emotional about a topic. And yeah, you're right. They will throw the baby out with the bathwater. They know that I was with the US government. I was in the intelligence community. So therefore I must be a disinformation agent. In fact, when I tell them, no, actually I wasn't psychological operations, I was counterintelligence, they don't know the difference. They think they're the same, and they're not, you know, and unless you are a counterintelligence practitioner, that's a little detail that most people don't know. And so herein lies part of the challenge we have, is not only to have the conversation with people, but also educate them on perhaps maybe some misconceptions that they've had about this topic. You know, the moment we mention the word UFO, people think little green men and tinfoil hats and again, Elvis on the mothership. When in reality, we're not having that conversation at all. We're saying, hey, look, there's something in our controlled US airspace. We don't know what it is. We don't know how it works. We don't know what its intent. We don't know who's behind the wheel. We should probably figure it out, right? It's called US Air Domain Awareness. We have an actual national intelligence manager, a NIM, if you will, at the DNI, at the Director of National Intelligence, whose whole job is to figure out what's in our airspace, right? And so this is a very perplexing issue. It is a national security issue. And a lot of times people, the moment you make something a national security issue, people are going to automatically jump and say, well, the government's our enemy. The government's been lying to us for all these years. And, you know, the government's no good. And my response to that is, look, the government's no different than a person. You know, it can do a lot of good and it can do a lot of bad. And it's up to us, the people, to make sure that it stays on the side of good. That's really up to us to do.
Well, and your goal was always, Lou, from when I first met you years ago, your goal was always to get the truth out, to get people to talk about a subject that you believed did not belong behind closed doors, but literally belonged to the people of Earth, right?
Correct. And I'll give you a perfect case of point. After this discussion, I guarantee you, I absolutely guarantee you, 100% certainty that someone's going to say, that was an interesting show that Lou did, but why did he do Sarah Carter? I don't like Sarah Carter, right? And instead of realizing that you and I are having this conversation, they are going to simply, or you, they'll throw you in a category because you had me on as a guest, without listening to the conversation we're actually trying to have with each other.
That's absolutely true. And it's so unfortunate, because I have, you know, I have spent my career just like you, Lou, you know, overseas, working as a journalist on the front lines in war zones. And, you know, my life has been about getting the truth out, talking to people, not being afraid to talk about certain subjects. And it's become so politically divisive in our nation over the last several years that I think it's done enormous damage to us as a country and as well as understanding truth, right? Because truth is not really relative. I mean, if there is something in our skies, it can be relative in certain senses, but not in the absolute. If there is something in the sky, there is something in the sky. If we don't understand what it is, then we don't understand what it is. And that should be studied. And our conversation should be just what it is, our conversation, so that the audience, every one of you out there listening to Lou and I, can make your own decision for yourself as to what you think needs to be done, which I think is what you've done with Congress. And I think this subject is a bipartisan subject. It's something that we can all unite with. I think for the most part in America, we're learning now because of Ukraine that we have to come together as a nation. And I think we have in a certain sense when we see the atrocities being committed by Russia in Ukraine. But you're right. There's always this sliver, right? This disinformation that's out there. And all of us, but I blame, you know, some journalists who, and I know what you're talking about, who have actually, you know, jumped on a bandwagon to, and some have been paid, you know, to write hit pieces on people and do certain things. And I think that the people that pays the biggest price for that is the audience, are us, the American people, right? We're paying the price for it because we don't trust anyone anymore.
Look, freedom of the press is one of the tenets of our the very fabric of our Constitution, and it is meant to keep the people informed so they're never taken advantage of. The problem is when the press becomes incentivized to becomes a business rather than to report the truth, then it becomes problematic because people don't necessarily know the difference. And you know, you said something really interesting, Sarah. I'd love to dissect it just a little bit. You know, there are truths. There are personal truths that everybody will agree are personal truths, like, for example, politics and religion and philosophy. Right. That my personal truth may not be your personal truth, but they're still truths to ourselves. Then you have universal truths, like gravity, right? That affects us all the same, whether we like it or not. And I think when we talk about UAPs, we're talking about a universal truth, the fact that it is real. But we're not trying to affect anybody's personal truth. We're not telling anybody what to think about. We're just simply saying, look, here's the facts. Here's the reality. It's up to you to turn this universal truth and incorporate into whatever personal truth you happen to, you know, to hold yourself. We're not trying to interfere with that personal truth. We're just simply saying, hey, here's another universal truth, and you try to figure it out. I think there's a responsibility by members of the media to try to hold themselves up to a higher standard. A lot of them are very, very good. We mentioned George Knapp earlier. You know, this is a guy who's tenacious. He is a true investigative journalist and a professional. But then you have others that call themselves journalists, but aren't really. And they take money from special interests and influence. And that really hurts folks like you in your profession that really are fair and objective, that are trying to do, you know, a good job for the American people and your audience, and trying to provide all the information so they can make a decision themselves. And it ultimately does not only erode or decay the confidence the American people have in the media, but also hurts the media. Look what happened right now recently with CNN. And, you know, this is a media outlet that as a kid I would watch. It got completely destroyed to now to the point where they're saying, look, you know, we're not going to really do editorials anymore. We're going to get back to basics and just provide the news, because things get out of hand. And by the way, I'm not just picking on CNN. You know, that's prevalent in a lot of different media outlets. I won't spend time on that.
No, you're absolutely right. It's every single one of us. You know, when I decided to start writing columns and I became more of a columnist, and I left kind of like, I wanted to be able to do columns with my opinion. Now I've been very open about that. That's why I have the podcast. That's why I go out. I do the shows. People kind of know where I stand. But when I was a journalist working in Afghanistan, or covering, you know, the war zone or covering Mexico and on the border. I mean, I was there to tell the stories of what happened, and the voices were just of those of the people, right? Nobody else was involved. It was what I discovered as an investigative journalist. I found tunnels underneath, you know, going from Mexico to the United States, or here's what's happening in this village because of the drug cartels, or this is what the Taliban is doing to this village in Afghanistan, or here's our U.S. soldiers. Much different. Now, if a journalist comes out and says, you know, I'm a columnist, I'm writing a story, it's going to have a point of view, but it's going to be based on facts, not lies, based on facts.
Right.
That's different. Then you can accept that. You could say, okay, I get that.
Well, you've always been very honest. You tell people ahead of time, look, I'm going to give you my perspective. And that's fair, because we're all entitled to do that.
Right.
I've never once seen you, you know, hide your hand and say, look, you know, provide your opinion as if it's facts. Yeah. You know, I've always seen you, and that's why I continue to do your show, because I think you've been very fair and honest about that. And I can tell you, I appreciate that. And I'm sure your audience appreciates that as well.
Well, I do. I mean, thank you so much. And I appreciate that from you. And I'm going to make this fun. I promise I'm going to ask you some fun questions, because I mean, this is such a heavy subject and it's such an important subject, but we're at the cusp, maybe that's a better way of saying it, of change, permanent change. We've seen this with Elon Musk and his phenomenal work, you know, his quest to take mankind from Earth to Mars. And we're growing exponentially, right, in science and our capabilities. Do you think some of this knowledge, some of our capabilities that we have out there, I mean, you see a lot of the people talking about this, UFOologists and others, is that based on any kind of, I mean, that we may have some of these UFOs, like we've heard about Roswell, or that we may have some ability to understand the mechanisms that drive some of these machines that we're seeing in our skies?
Yeah, certainly in ATIP, one of our focuses, and even OSAP earlier than that, the program preceding ATIP, was to try to figure out the associated technologies and physics that could explain what we were observing, and try to see if we could somehow replicate that or exploit that. As for the discussion you asked about, or just now the question about, you know, potential recovery of certain things, it's no secret that the U.S. government and other governments obviously are always trying to keep a competitive advantage over everybody else. That's just the nature of things. And so anytime you see something that's exotic, you want to see if you can understand it and say, okay, how does it work? And what's the materials involved? How's it built? And how's it organized? What's the technology that's used, if you will, behind this thing? I will tell you point blank, I am not at liberty to discuss any details what the government may or may not have in its inventory regarding UAP. I will unfortunately have to take a polite pass on that. That's not up for me to have that discussion. But what I can say is that clearly it's in any country's best interest if something were to, you know, be able to perform in super exotic ways, one would want to figure out how those things work. And there's many ways to do it. You know, obviously intelligence collection is one of them, but there's also material exploitation. You know, how's it actually, what's the molecular organization, if you will, of chemicals and elements within a certain material so it can do special things, right? That's the difference between, let's say, a nickel-cadmium NiCad battery and a lithium-ion battery, right? They're both batteries, but they're built differently and they perform a hell of a lot differently, right? And so, you know, I know I'm kind of probably skirting the question here, but unfortunately, I'm going to have to take a pass on it.
I get it. I guess we don't hold that kind of security clearance to hear whatever it is you have to say to us. But to me, it's very interesting because, well, let me ask you this. How do you feel about Elon Musk? I mean, he's made no secret that he wants to live on Mars, you know, one day. SpaceX was built specifically, I believe, in his, you know, in his dream of taking human beings to colonize other planets. Probably it will one day save our species and the rest of our species on planet Earth if anything ever happens. you know, all the animals and beautiful creatures here. I mean, what do you think about that? I mean, he's made such enormous strides. I mean, even with Tesla. But I mean, with SpaceX, it's been pretty incredible. And the satellites and all of that incredible stuff that he's been able to do.
I would say, you know, let's remind your audience that every principle in science, every law that we now know and hold to be true, started off one day as someone's wacky idea. Okay. And so here we are. And I think people like Elon Musk have done incredible jobs of breaking out of the existing paradigm or notion of what someone can and can't do, right? Here's someone who started their own space agency, literally, and is outperforming to some degree a lot of the government counterparts, where we're now turning to private organizations to do the job that once only governments could do. Because why? Well, they can do it better, faster, and more efficiently, and in some degree, even safer. So we have to give credit where credit is due. And I think it is that almost maverick, if you will, approach to this topic that has helped us get to where we are today. And I think people like Elon Musk, having that creativity, that motivation, that drive, the courage to say, yes, I can, I think is what the human spirit is all about. And I'll tell you right now, maybe there's some young person in your audience, you know, young guy or gal out there or in between that is listening to this and may one day be the director of this, you know, UAP agency that maybe one day exists within our government, you know?
Right.
I think that spirit of the human spirit to just go and do it, I think is something that we should encourage and we shouldn't squelch. Unfortunately, all too often, and again, back to social media, we see that. We see people poo-poo ideas because simply, well, it can't be done. It's too hard. It's too expensive. It'll never be done. And, you know, it takes a courageous few to break that mold and say, yeah, we can.
I think that's a really awesome way of putting it. And I do believe that is what makes us so unique and so remarkable is that we're human, you know, is that we have the ability, even though we understand the concepts of death, we understand to some extent that we're finite, we put that aside in the spirit of moving forward for our species as a whole and seeking out things that for most people, I always think about the, you know, Neil Armstrong on the moon or our first astronauts or the people that first flew in a plane or studied or understood or went into the sea. And you know, all of these very dangerous tasks, they decided, you know what, it's worth the risk. We're going to do it. So my final question to you, Lou, is where do we go from here? What do you see in the future right now as far as the program is concerned? And do you believe that in our lifetime, there will be positive proof or sometime in our lifetime, positive proof that we will visually see of another life form that is in the universe that has reached us?
I remain very optimistic that will be the case. You know, we spend millions of dollars each year trying through NASA to find microbial life on other planets in our solar system and time and effort trying to find technosignatures through efforts like SETI in our galaxy. And we've been around as a species for a really long time. And the real question is, well, is it possible during that time that life has found us first? And I think statistically, the answer is probably a resounding yes, whatever this is. The question is you know, really, what is it and where is it from and who's behind? Now the real hard question starts because we've already had former directors of CIA and directors of national intelligence and presidents all come out and say, yes, it's real. This is real. I mean, we are now... We have crossed the Rubicon. Disclosure has occurred. You know, so if people are waiting for someone to say it's real, that already happened. That's why you now have this Gillibrand law in effect. So we've already accomplished that. The question is no longer, is it real? We know it is real. The question is what it is. Will we find that out in our lifetime? I think we're going to start getting a lot more answers. I think as we continue to have this conversation as a nation, as a society, and maybe even as a world, we'll begin to learn more and more and more. And I think I'm optimistic that my children certainly will have a lot more answers than my generation. And part of that is because of the, I think this next generation is a lot more fearless. They're not subject to some of the same social constraints that we were growing up. You know, they are far more accepting of the fact that the universe is huge and that we are, you know, but one life form on a planet full of life, abundant. Life is everywhere. Every time we try to put a box around nature, nature always figures out a way to get out of it, right? At one point when you're in school, my generation learned that all life relied on photosynthesis. Well, we realize that's not true. There's life at the bottom of the ocean that lives off chemosynthesis. And then we said, well, all life has to have DNA. Well, okay, but now you have viruses that only have RNA, right? And so again, every time we try to put a limitation on life, she breaks out and she shows us that, you know, Mother Nature, she has a vote. Look at these extremophiles that live in, you know, miles below the Arctic ice and some that live on the highest tops of the mountain. In fact, there's microbial life that sometimes hitch a ride on rockets up to the space station and seem to do just fine. So I think really the question is more of us, you know, why do we keep putting these artificial limitations on what life should and shouldn't be when every time we do that, we're always taught a lesson. You know, Mother Nature comes back and says, yeah, not so fast.
I think that's a great way to look at it. We don't have the answers to everything. We don't know everything. And anybody who tells you they do is somebody you need to watch out for, because we really are still living in an awesome universe and an awesome world. I agree with you, Lou, that's full of mystery, that makes life worth living, that tells me we've got so much more to learn. And I really hope, as I wrap this up with you, I really hope that if those UAPs are, you know, zipping and zapping all around, you know, Ukraine and Russia and around any of those nuclear sites, I certainly hope this time they just turn the button off. Just turn it off. If Putin,
Yeah. Me too.
If Putin decides to go a little crazier than he's already been going, or living up to his name, then they just shut him down. I think that would be nice to do to that tyrant. But anyways, thank you so much for being on the show today, Lou. You're a great friend. You're a great human being. Is there anything we should be aware of with your future? Any projects you're working on? Anything you're getting ready to do that you'd like to share with us?
You know, I keep my cards close to my chest, Sarah. What I would like to do is once again thank your awesome husband, Marty.
Aww.
Incredible hero. Again, your audience will never know, but those of us in the community know damn well what he's done for his country. And just wanted to say a big, big hello and thank you for his service and your service, for always being there for him and the rest of us veterans. It means to us the world when we have someone like you championing us, because, you know, a lot of veterans don't have a voice. And so you serve as that voice for us. And I want to thank you sincerely.
I really appreciate that, Lou. You're the best of the best, let me tell you. And I don't know if our audience even understands that as well, but you really are truly a hero to me as well and to my husband. And we're grateful to have you as a friend. And thank you so much for being on the show. I hope you come back on again soon, though, because I'd like to continue to update this. There's a lot happening. You know, there's a lot more that's going to be happening this summer. So I just hope we stay in touch. I know the audience loves you. You're always one of my biggest shows. I know everybody wants to hear what's happening when you come on the show. So I invite you back on in the next few months to come back and update us on everything that's going on.
You got it, Sarah. Thank you. And anytime, and a big thank you to your incredible audience. Always an honor and pleasure.
Thank you, Lou. Wow, it was so great having Lou on. I can't wait to bring him back on. I mean, he has just been one of my favorite guests because he has so much extensive knowledge in a subject that I find fascinating, mysterious, and it makes me excited to be a part of this planet and a part of this universe. You know, there are still mysteries left in our world. Thank God for that. But this part is not a mystery. It's inflation. We all know it's real. We feel it in our pocketbook. We feel it when we go to the grocery store. We feel it when we go to the gas station. Dr. Mike Fulgens, America's gold expert and the 2021 Numismatic Dealer of the Year, is predicting that silver prices will continue to rise as what? As inflation and industrial use follow their upward trends. That's why his company, Universal Coin and Bullion, is offering you a new 2022 genuine 1 ounce silver American Eagle coin at just $28 with free shipping directly to you. Everyone should own a percentage of precious metals. So call 1-800-UCB-GOLD. That's 1-800-UCB-GOLD, Universal Coin and Bullion. Call them today. Be sure to mention me by name when you call. That's 1-800-UCB-GOLD, and you will get a tangible asset that you can actually hold in your hands. Call Universal Coin and Bullion at 1-800-UCB-GOLD, and their expert team of representatives will help you order your $28 American Silver Eagle coin today. 1-800-UCB-GOLD. Don't forget to tell them Sarah sent you.
Si tienes ciertas afecciones crónicas como enfermedad cardíaca,
asma,
diabetes, y tienes 19 años o más,
52,
36,
42,
puedes estar en mayor riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico acerca de vacunarte con Prevnar 20, vacuna conjugada antineumocócica 20 valente, una vacuna de Pfizer que puede ayudar a proteger contra la neumonía neumocócica con una sola dosis. Prevnar 20 está aprobada para adultos para ayudar a prevenir infecciones contra 20 cepas de la bacteria que causa la neumonía neumocócica. La aprobación continua puede depender de un estudio de apoyo. No uses Prevnar 20 si has tenido una reacción alérgica grave a la vacuna o a sus componentes. Adultos con sistemas inmunitarios debilitados pueden tener una respuesta reducida a la vacuna. El efecto secundario más reportado fue dolor en el área de la inyección. Para más efectos secundarios comunes e información completa de prescripción, llama al 1-855-213-2138 o visita Prevnar20enespañol.com. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico sobre Prevnar 20.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Well, I don't know, but I feel like I've got so much to think about, so much to do, so many things that I want to investigate after talking to Lou. And weren't you all just kind of like on the edge of your seat? Like when I was asking Lou about, you know, whether or not there's more information out there, whether they've seen, you know, some of these objects or whether or not we have any of them in our possession, I felt he was very evasive. He was almost like, I can't talk to you about certain things, right? I get that. And even when, believe me, even when I have tried to talk to Lou before the show or after the show, he will not say a thing. The guy is like, I mean, silent. It's like he locks his mouth and he throws away the key. But I do believe there is something out there that we do not know. I do believe there are mysteries in the universe that we have not even come close to not either understanding or comprehending. And I think we're an amazing species, right? We continue to search for things that seem impossible, but then become possible because we thought them. And I think that's why it was good to have Lou on the show. You know, we've heard so much bad news over the last several months and over the last several weeks. Watching what's happening in Ukraine has really been heartbreaking. It's been crushing. I hope everyone out there is saying prayers for our brothers and sisters in Ukraine. And for a matter of fact, for everybody in the world, as we, you know, deal with so much happening and even our own lives and our own national security seem at risk. It's nice to take a little break. It's nice to invite someone on the show that puts life back into perspective for us and lets us know that, you know what, maybe things really aren't that bad. And wow, there is some things that are so big, so mysterious that we may not have the answer for them in our own lifetime, but we can sure strive to get them. Thank you so much for being a part of the Sarah Carter Show. Thank you so much for being a part of my life. I'll say my prayers every day for each and every one of you and for the beautiful people of Ukraine. And, you know, as for that, for a matter of fact, is that this war stops, that it ends, and that all of us can move forward and make the world a better place for our children. God bless you. God bless our great nation. And God bless the great state of Texas.
Today, I'm joined by Rebecca Weber, the CEO of the Association for Mature American Citizens. It's also known as AMAC. Can you share a little bit with the audience about your father, Dan Weber, and how he founded AMAC and why?
My father formed AMAC after he recognized that the AARP really was not representing his values. And those values were really faith, family, and freedom. And my father believed in America's greatness. He believed that there was what he described as a cultural shift occurring in our country. He thought that the very, very foundation, the Constitution, was being disregarded. And we saw that the power of government was growing and individual freedoms were diminishing, were being threatened. And to get more specific, was in 2006 when he said to me that he was canceling his AARP membership. And I said to my father, why would you do that? And he said, well, they've just named Harry Belafonte Man of the Year. And he went on to say that Harry Belafonte had commented to Hugo Chavez saying that George W. Bush was the greatest terrorist threat in America. And my father said something is wrong with that. So he saw the AARP make this sharp left turn. And that was when he said, let's form AMAC. And I said, let's do it.
Rebecca, thanks so much for being with me today. I'm honored to have you and AMAC as a sponsor for the Sarah Carter Show. You know, for more information, folks, visit amac.us/Carter.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey, this is Todd Herman, host of The Todd Herman Show. You might have heard me on Rush Limbaugh's show, or as a regular fill-in for about 8 years. I now do a show out of the high mountains of free America because, you know, I got exiled from Seattle. Why the need to remake country music and into what? From there, I looked at art. Art under the guise of totalitarian regimes is so interesting because it seems that Beyonce is doing exactly what totalitarian regimes want done with art. Check out The Todd Herman Show every day on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.